Blog Talk Radio.
From Dog Works Training Centers, professional canine training centers in Denver, Colorado, and Anchorage, Alaska, this is Dog Works Radio, committed to families and their dogs to build lifelong and fulfilling relationships. Visit our website at dogworksradio.com. Dog Works Radio is part of Twine Group Media and syndicated worldwide on blogtalkradio.com. Now, here are your hosts, Robert and Michelle Forto.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto, and you're listening to Dog Works Radio. I am hosting up here from Willow, Alaska, and on the line we have our co-host from Denver, Colorado. Michelle, how are you?
I'm doing wonderful. It's a beautiful day here in Denver. I spent my Sunday morning shopping for our daughter's birthday. And otherwise, everything is doing great. Yesterday at Denver Dog Works, we did offer our one-a-year special for lifetime group training, and that went pretty well. We offer that once a year, every year, on our daughter's birthday weekend. That is lifetime group training for $99. If you missed out, please give me a call, and I might be able to work a deal out with the owner and manager and get you that class through the rest of this month.
So what's going on with dog training in Denver? I know Denver is a very big dog city, and we're going to talk about another huge dog city in California in just a few minutes, but what's going on with dog training in Denver?
You know, dog training in Denver is trendy. People talk about the fact that they're going to get a dog, and the first thing your friend asks you is, who's going to be your dog trainer? And, you know, I'm proud to say that a lot of times the answer is Robert and Michelle Forto with Denver Dog Works and our son Kyle. And you know what? That's a big, huge compliment, considering the fact that we're not a franchise. We're a small mom-and-pop business. And I like the fact that our name is being mentioned a lot. But I also see a trend lately in the last 3 months where people aren't doing dog training. They're doing the self-help books, they're watching the videos, they're playing the season-long games, you know, the card game and things like that you can purchase, and that's great. But a lot of times, especially when you rescue a dog, dog training is not as easy as it looks, as we've written about in our blogs. There are certain occasions where you will get a dog or you will adopt a dog or rescue a dog, and you have no idea what you've gotten yourself into. Or in a situation like I was faced with yesterday, one of my rescue friends has fostered out a dog to a family that already had another dog, and the other dog is acting quite boisterous towards this new dog who is 6 months old. Their dog is 6 years old. And as I tried to explain to everyone involved that it wasn't the puppy that was having trouble acclimating to the new situation, it was the established dog that was having trouble acclimating to the situation, a six-year-old dog that had been in their home since he was 8 weeks old. He has some hierarchy issues, which, Robert, you're fully aware of, means that he owns and controls the house. So that's what we're talking about. Everyone should have a trainer in their back pocket, same as you have a medical doctor, same as you have an attorney, same as you have an insurance agent. Because if you have a dog trainer in your back pocket that you can freely call at any moment's time, who will answer a quick question for you over the phone, you have a golden ticket for you and your dog.
Well, there you go. So today we're going to talk about an issue that we're facing right here and now. It's summertime dangers for pets. And I know I was watching Facebook yesterday, and a lot of people were talking about burning your dog's paws on the hot pavement. And I know you posted something a couple of days ago about walking barefoot, and if it's too hot for you, it's too hot for your dog. And with that, I have on calling in from California, her name is Jillian Myers. She is a Pet Tech certified instructor of pet first aid and CPR, and she teaches it in the Los Angeles area. And before we introduce her, I want to make sure that everybody knows that there is such a thing as pet first aid and CPR, and it's very similar to the same classes that you would receive at the, you know, American Red Cross or things like that, but there are companies throughout the nation that provide it for your pets. I know we've taught it many a times at Denver Dog Works and throughout the years, and we have a CPR mannequin that is named Casper, and we can teach CPR and that sort of thing as we go. So without further ado, calling in from the Los Angeles area, Jillian Myers. Jillian, how are you?
I'm doing well, Robert. Good morning, Michelle. Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, thank you very much for joining us on a Sunday morning. I don't know what's going on down there in L.A., but my first question is, what is going on with that Carmageddon that they're saying where they've pretty much closed down the city because of the traffic?
Well, the busiest highway in the country, the busiest stretch of highway is between Los Angeles proper and the valley, because you have to go over the 405 to get between the two. And they are they're widening that, which is, you know, a godsend, because on a Friday night to get one from one area to the other, it'll take you, depending on when you go, a good hour and a half to 2 hours sometimes. And they're demolishing the Mulholland Bridge. So they shut down that little stretch of highway from Friday night around 7, and I think they're supposed to reopen it at 6 o'clock in the morning, tomorrow morning. And, yeah, they've been calling it Carmageddon. You know, it's funny because of all the publicity that they've had for it, traffic has actually been down a lot. You know, you know, maybe a month now, and especially in the last, you know, week and a half or so, they've really been, like, pumping it up on the media and that kind of thing. And I've noticed, like, yesterday driving around, you know, I live in Venice, which is, you know, the second most popular tourist attraction after Disneyland, and there was no traffic whatsoever. In summertime, that's unheard of. Because it's just, it's insane, you know, driving around here. I don't even, on the weekends, I don't even like leaving my house to go to the grocery store because it'll take an hour. So in this last weekend, because everybody is staying home, it's awesome.
Well, I guess you could, you know, get a quick trip to the grocery if there's no traffic going on. So with that, Jillian, just another side note in regards to living in the city of L.A. and being a you know, a pet business. Do you do any type of training at people's homes? Do you have to do long commutes? And if you do, how long does it take you to get from one side of town to the other? Because I know living in Denver, you know, it takes an hour, hour and a half from from the east side to the west side to do a dog training class or so. But tell us about, you know, one of the largest cities in America and how people deal with that if they're going across town just for a simple dog training class or something like that.
Well, you're definitely going to plan for it. You know, I don't go anywhere around rush hour. If I'm going from Venice Beach to, say, the east side of town, which would be maybe like Silver Lake or the downtown area, I'm going to definitely plan on 45 minutes. But that's during no traffic. So, you know, anywhere you go in town, I kind of gauge about 45 minutes to an hour, unless you're going during rush hour. And then that's going to add another 20 minutes to a half an hour. So you really, it's kind of insane. I really, you know, I moved out here 13 years ago from Indiana, and I have had to make a conscious decision to not have road rage, because you'll have it each and every time. And, you know, people can get a little crazy out here. So you want to kind of stay away from that and, you know, count to 10 is what I do.
Right. Right. So you are a pet first aid instructor, and as I mentioned in the opening there, that's an important type of class that we need to teach to most of our dogs. You never know when those emergencies are going to occur. So tell us a little bit about yourself. I know you gave me your bio and how you got started with Diego. So let's start with that. What happened to Diego, and how did that kind of accumulate into what you're doing today?
Well, I had always considered myself a caring and conscientious pet owner, and I knew that pet first aid classes existed, and I had planned on taking one, but, you know, life got in the way. And there was one day, it was October 29th, 2007, I took Diego to get his teeth cleaned, and when I picked him up, you know, something just wasn't right. He just wasn't, you know, normally when I'd pick him up from a teeth cleaning, he'd be a little groggy, that kind of thing. But, you know, he for the most part, he'd be pretty normal. And this time he was just really out of it. And I mentioned it to the vet tech, and she was like, oh, he's just coming off his anesthesia. So, you know, just being your pet owner, I'm thinking, okay, they're professional. I took him home, and I actually was back in Indiana visiting my family at the time. So I, all the way home to my dad's house, I just was kind of like tripping out a little bit in my head, to tell you the truth, because he just didn't seem right. And I get him home to my father's house, and my dad takes one look at him, and he says, he doesn't look right. And I'm thinking, oh, man, don't say that. So I call the vet, and they had actually been very overbooked. They had some kind of emergency or something when I was there, so it took quite a while just to pick Diego up. And so the first call went into their voicemail. So I called back again, and I talked to the vet tech, and she, you know, I told her what the deal was, and she's like, oh, give him an antibiotic. And I said, well, he can't swallow water. There's no way I can give him an antibiotic. And she says, well, give me a call back in 5 minutes so I can talk to the doctor. So I call back in 5 minutes, and the doctor said, bring him on in. So I start pulling out of the driveway, and then I get my dad over, call my dad over and said, you know what, can you drive? I want to hold Diego. And thank goodness I did, because, you know, it was about a 20-minute drive back into town, and about halfway through, Diego just went limp, you know. And my dad starts running red lights. I start doing the bargaining with God kind of thing. You know, I hadn't taken a CPR class, so I blew into his mouth, which now I know is the wrong thing to do. You know, this kind of white foam came out, you know. And then I get him to the vet's office, and they worked on him for about a half an hour, and he died. Mm. And all from a routine teeth cleaning. And I always get emotional, so I do apologize. Because it was very traumatic. It was very traumatic. You know, so I took him to Indiana in a carry-on bag, and I took him home in a box, you know. Mm. And because of that that situation, you know, and the heartache that I felt, and because it was so unexpected, you know, I thought I was taking him to get his teeth cleaned in order to extend his life, you know, and it really cut it short. And now I offer, you know, pet first aid and CPR classes. That's why I became an instructor. And, you know, people ask me, well, do you think you would have been able to save him had you known then what you now know now? And, you know, with the rescue breathing techniques that I know and the CPR, I don't know. You know, it's the statistics, I think, are, you know, if you actually do perform CPR on an animal, less than 2% of them actually still survive. But I do know that I would have been able to recognize the signs that he was in shock, you know, because he was very cool to touch. You know, he was just out of it. His he had labor breathing, and I at the time I could have done what we call a capillary refill, and I'll talk about that a little bit later. And I would have known that he was in shock, so I would never have left the vet's office, and then I would have insisted on the vet seeing him. That would have given them an extra hour to start working on him. And, you know, I really want to put the knowledge of pets' health, you know, back into the pet owner's hands so that they can be a little bit more knowledgeable. Because at the end of the day, even our veterinarians are human beings, our vet techs are human beings, and they do make mistakes, you know. So it's something that, you know, I just want to put in the pet owner's toolbox.
Right. And like Michelle was saying at the beginning, if you have those tools, that just makes that pet ownership so much easier, whether it's with training or canine and first aid and CPR and things like that. We're talking to Jillian Myers. Her website is healthypawsla.com, and we're talking about pet safety, pet first aid, and CPR. You know, Jillian, you had mentioned that Diego pretty much started, you know, having ill effects as you brought him home. And I know from my experience, and just to kind of throw it out there to our guests, is that is one of the reasons why when dogs are put under anesthesia, even for a simple teeth cleaning, they often have to take a blood test. And what they're doing is they're checking different levels to make sure that your dog can go under successfully under anesthesia. Did they do that with Diego?
Absolutely, absolutely. And that was the thing, you know, when I first got Diego's teeth cleaned out here in California, the veterinarian, she asked me, she says, well, do you want to do these tests? And I was like, well, why would I need to do that? Because this is a routine teeth clean. She said, well, you know, anytime you put an animal under, and really with human beings too, it happens all the time. You know, you hear the horror stories out here in Los Angeles about someone getting lipo and then they die. You know, anytime you put anything under anesthesia, there's always that chance. But so she told me, you know, you can do the $25 little test or you can do the $50 test, you know, and it just, the test, I can't remember exactly what they entail, but they just want to make sure that all the vitals fall within the normal guidelines. And I always had that $50 test, and he was within those normal guidelines. You know, I'm, you know, the veterinarian, you know, I asked him, you know, did they give him too much gas? Of course, you know, they said that he probably had a reaction. But to me, it was, like, kind of interesting because they've done them. They've done his teeth many times before, you know. Did they change the gas? Was it, you know, and a lot of times you will. I think with the vet, what a lot of people don't know is with your teeth cleaning is typically it's not the veterinarian that's doing the teeth cleaning; it's the vet tech, and
right.
You know your vet tech isn't nearly as trained as your veterinarian, and you know who knows exactly what's going on in the back room. It's just something that you got to be aware of, absolutely.
Right, and like you said, they're human too. You know, it's difficult to gauge every single. You know, dog to every single situation, but, you know, we're entrusting them with our pets' lives, and in today's day and age, our pets are part of our family, so we care very much about them and the care that they receive. So today, Jillian, I want to talk about some summertime dangers. I know we mentioned at the opening about, you know, hot pads on the pavement. I know living in L.A. where it's, you know, 300 degrees all the time. Tell us a little bit about some of the things that you guys teach in your pet first aid classes that deal with these everyday dangers, whether it be, you know, heat exhaustion to trauma, to your dog getting hit by a car, you know, to ingesting poisons, that sort of thing. Give us a rundown of some of the things that you encounter and you teach about in your class.
Well, you know, just like you guys mentioned, if it's too hot outside for your animal to walk on the pavement, if it's too hot for you, it's too hot for your animal. And, you know, something that I've seen some people around here, they have those little doggy booties for their dogs. But you have to keep in mind that even if you have those little doggy booties, that they do help, but our animals actually sweat and cool themselves off not only through panting but also through their paw pads. So if you do have paw pads, protectors or little booties for your dog, you want to make sure that, you know, you take them off periodically so that they can still get that circulation in there. And then, you know, we just had a couple of weeks ago the biggest weekend for summertime pet dangers, and that was the 4th of July. And
right.
Just because the fireworks are over and for the 4th of July doesn't mean they're over for the summer, you know. I know you have an international audience, but a lot of times around here, like with the, you know, we have the Dodgers and people are getting married in these big hotels, and they'll still put off fireworks and things like that. And you get a lot of animals that are scared of those. We see, I'm a volunteer at the West Los Angeles Animal Shelter, and we get a huge influx of lost dogs on weekends where there are going to be a lot of fireworks around. And so that's something that you want to keep in mind if your animal is, you know, scared of thunder, of fireworks. You know, you want to make sure that they have their identification, they're microchipped. You know, if there's normally an outside dog, you might want to bring them in for that kind of period of time. You know, turn on the TV, the air conditioning, things that can kind of help muffle those sounds out. And, you know, because of these fireworks and because of the huge amount of traffic in summertime, people going to the beach, people driving around to different festival events, you know, a lot of animals get hit by cars. And, you know, an interesting statistic is that 80% of your dogs hit by cars are unneutered males. So what that means is they're either running to find something or they're running away for something. So, you know, something that can help alleviate that, not only, you know, keeping your animal, you know, properly restrained, within, you know, your house or your fence, but to make sure that they're neutered, because that will help decrease their wanting to get out and search for things.
on the prowl, I guess.
Yeah, on the prowl, exactly. But, you know, it's kind of funny because in when I first took this class, when I was being trained, I didn't really, you know, yeah, I knew about getting hit by a car, but I never thought about the fact of the dangers inside the car, because I used to take Diego with me everywhere, and I still take my dog with me everywhere, my current dog, her name is Angel Baby, but now I restrain her because, you know, there's always that chance. You always think it's not going to happen to you, but you can always get in an accident, and whether it's your fault or someone else's, you know, things can get thrown around in your car, and not only can your animal, your pet, become a living missile, you know, they can fly out of your truck or your car through the window. So anytime you take your dog with you, you know, if you're taking them to the vet or anything like that, it's best to either have them crated behind maybe the passenger seat and have that crate secured. Or they actually make a lot of nice little doggy harnesses that that buckle right into the seatbelt. And with my dog, I have a nice little bed that's kind of elevated. It comes in this nice little suitcase, and you put the bed on top of the suitcase, and then you strap those together, and then you strap it all in with your seatbelt. And then within the bed, there's a little hook that snatches on or that attaches to a harness. And you want to make sure that you're not just attaching, say, a hook or a seatbelt to your dog's collar. You want it to actually be attached to the harness, because if you attach it to a collar and you get into an accident, you know, you can get into some breakneck situations if, you know, you just step on the gas really quickly and your dog goes flying. You actually want to have it, you know, really properly restrained around the torso, not around the neck. And then also, if you're restraining your animal in the car, you want to put them in the back seat. Because, if, you know, just like with your, I think it's your kids under 40 pounds, you have to have them restrained, you know, in the back seat, because those airbags come out at 200 miles per hour. And, again, if you have your animal in the front seat and they get hit by one of these airbags, not only can, you know, it break things, you know, their neck, their nose, that kind of thing, but you can get a lot amputation of the tongue, which it will be death within minutes, because there's a sublingual artery in the tongue and the animal will bleed out in just a matter of minutes. So there are a lot of dangers on the inside of the car as well. And then, you know, we always see it, our dogs always, because they have such a highly developed sense of smell, they love to stick their head out of the car. And, you know, I don't know if everyone's like me, but I have one of those little chinks in the car, in my windshield, where, you know, a rock has flown up and hit it. So if a rock can fly up at such force to make a little, you know, divot in your windshield, you can imagine what it's going to do to the soft tissue of the nose or to the eyes. So that's another good reason for having your animal restrained within the car when you're going out to go to the vet and things like that.
You know, Jillian, that's a great point with the rock danger from, you know, rocks jumping up and hitting your dog. I've never thought about that, but that's a great point, because, you know, especially up here in Alaska where we don't have a lot of, you know, super highway paved roads, people are running around with those cracks in their windshields all the time, but they don't pay any attention to letting their dog stick their head out. They think that that's what the dog wants to do. So I think that's a great point. We're talking to Jillian Myers. She is with a company called HealthyPawsLA.com. She is the owner of that company, and she teaches pet first aid and CPR. So, Jillian, if we could, let's go back to talking about when your dog gets hit by a car or run over or that sort of thing. You know, a lot of times, you know, just being able to know what you're supposed to do and those signs that you need to recognize if your dog does get hit is what can save your dog's life. And in human emergency medicine, they call it the golden hour of trauma. That's that hour that a person needs to be helped in order to save his life, whether it be from, you know, shock or severe trauma on the inside from the organs and things. So what should people start to look for if your dog, you know, runs out of the house and, God forbid, gets hit by the car, you know, in front of the house? What are some of the things that we need to watch out for and not overreact and start screaming and, you know, throwing a fit, you know, start thinking collectively about what we need to do? So let's talk about that.
Okay, well, you're right. You know, there's a little statistic by the American Animal Hospital Association that 25% more pets would be saved if just one pet first aid technique were applied before getting emergency veterinary treatment. And that's a huge statistic. And, you know, if something happens to your animal, that just like you said, you know, you don't want to scream. You don't, you know, you want to take a breath, remain calm, gather your faculties as much as you can, because our animals operate at a higher bandwidth than humans do. You know, we've all heard of those dogs that can predict cancer, or the cat that's in the nursing home and she always went to hang out with the person that was going to die. You know, I would not want her in my room. But you want to gather yourselves so that not only are you not freaking the dog out, but you're able to more easily gather the information that you need to within yourself. You know, we all know a lot more about first aid and CPR than we really think we do. But it's kind of like that thing where when you freak out, you know, maybe you have to give a speech in front of 100 people. You know, you've practiced this speech for weeks, and then you get up there and, you know, because you're kind of panicking, boom, it goes right out. You know, so what we want to do in that first situation is kind of, we want to do what we call a primary pet assessment, and that's trying to establish exactly what's going on with the animal at that moment in time. You know, there's really only three situations that you're going to come across in an emergency. Either the animal has a heartbeat and it's breathing, so that means it's going to most likely warrant first aid. It either is not breathing and has a heartbeat. So if it's not breathing and it has a heartbeat, what are we going to do for it? We're going to rescue it by breathing for it. So we're going to do rescue breathing. And then the third situation that you come across is it doesn't have a heartbeat and it's not breathing. So that means if the heart's not working, then everything up, you know, the brain, the breathing isn't working either. So we're going to have to perform CPR. So in that primary pet assessment, it takes about 15 seconds to do, and you're basically you're just going to do give it a couple breaths, and it's kind of hard to describe on the phone, but you're kind of going to clap your hands, say, "Doggy, doggy, are you okay?" You want to try to see if you're going to get a reaction out of them. You're going to place your hand on the chest, and then with your other hand, you're going to extend the head up and open up the airway. You're going to pull the tongue past the canines. Form an airtight seal form an airtight seal by clamping the lips together. You're going to give two slow, full breaths into the snout. We don't do mouth to mouth on our animals, as I, you know, inadvertently did with Diego. We actually do mouth to snout. So you're going to give two slow, full breaths into the snout, and then you're going to do a pulse check. And those two initial breaths that you give into the nose are really designed to make sure that you have an established airway, because we don't know what's going on with this dog. If we didn't actually see the accident happening, we don't know if this dog is maybe knocked out because it choked maybe on a rawhide or like a tennis ball. So those two slow, full breaths that we give in initially in the primary pet assessment is to determine that we actually have an established airway and there's not something in there that's blocking. And then when we reach around and we do a pulse check at the femoral artery, which is right in the inner thigh, that's to make sure that the animal actually has a pulse. You know, does it have breathing? Does it actually have a pulse? And from the end of that primary pet assessment, which ends with that pulse check, then we're going to determine what is our next course of action. You know, if they have breathing, if they have a heartbeat, we're going to do first aid. If they have no breathing but a heartbeat, we're going to reverse thrust, and we're going to come back up, and we're going to rescue it by breathing for it. If they don't have breathing or the heartbeat, then we're going to do the CPR.
Right, and that continues on until the next point I want to make is about taking the dog to the next step, which would be going to an emergency vet or something like that. You know, a lot of times people ask me that question when we teach first aid and CPR, is what do you do with the dog? You know, and especially dogs that aren't yours. You know, you're walking down the street, you see a dog, you know, dash out into traffic and get hit, and then, you know, most people will do what they can to render aid. But, you know, pets, they don't have ambulances. So it is our job as owners to get them to the vet. So describe that a little bit. You know, you've done CPR, you've done breathing, everything's good, but you need to get him to the vet, but he's on that verge of you know, going to the next level. What do you tell your students in order to get him to that vet?
Well, first, I'm going to back up a little bit. First and foremost, you want to make sure, because pets are considered property, you want to make sure if it's someone else's animal, another person's dog, and that person is actually there, you want to make sure that you ask them, this is the whole legal kind of thing, you want to make sure that you ask them if you can actually work on their animal, which, you know, I'm sure 99 times out of 100 somebody's going to say, of course, you know. But you want to make sure you ask them that. If there's an animal that you can't see an owner around, then it's implied that the animal would ask you, and I do that in quotes, for help. So it's implied that you would help them. But what we advise our students to do is, when they're working on the animal, we actually, in the class, we teach everyone to do the actions that they're doing, the rescuing actions that they're doing. Say it out loud. Call for help. Because if you say these things out loud, you know, like breath rise and fall, pulse check, you know, you can help to garner some attention your way. And people, if there's someone around, then people will come over to, you know, help you. You want to definitely call for help, because, you know, it's pretty much impossible to administer first aid or CPR and drive a car at the same time. But having said that, you know, we also recommend to our pet owners to, you know, have a pet first aid kit in your house, in your car. You know, if you're going for a hike, have a little mini one, you know, as a fanny pack, because, you know, I keep my pet first aid kit in my crate in the house, so I always know where it is. If I have to grab the crate, I do it all together. You know, in my car, I have my pet first aid kits, and I have a bunch of different blankets, so that, you know, if I need help to, you know, if the dog is knocked out and maybe it's a larger dog, it will help me to wrap up the dog, put the dog in the car, or if I'm out hiking, you know, I can lay the dog on, you know, a blanket or a towel, and I can kind of drag them, you know, out of the hike area, as opposed to try to carry, you know, maybe I'm dog walking my friend's, you know, big mastiff, and that's just, you know, I'm only 120 pounds, and maybe this dog is 120 pounds, so that's not really going to happen. So, you know, we really advise people to be prepared by having a pet first aid kit, and you know, it's not just something where you want to go buy one at the store. You should, because a lot of them, and this goes with human first aid kits also, a lot of them are just a bunch of Band-Aids, you know, so you want to kind of assemble your own and have one together that's put together for the size of the animals, particularly that you have. And then also we say, you know, just like you should, for, you know, you should have your, in case of emergency, phone numbers in your phone, you know, for your humans, you should have the same thing for your animals. You know, you should know in each area that you go, and I teach this to a lot of pet care professionals, so, you know, they, a lot of times they'll service people in different zip codes, so they should know exactly where the emergency clinic is or the emergency pet hospital is in that area, because if you have to Google that or, you know, look it up on your computer, or I don't know if people even have, you know, yellow pages anymore. If you have to, that's brain cells dying. So you definitely want to be prepared and know where those centers are. And always, in an emergency, you know, you should always call the vet first before you go, because they may have further instructions for you to do at the scene where you are, particularly in the case of, like, poisoning. You know, they may have you induce vomiting at the scene, because if you were to just load your animal up in the car and you have to drive for, you know, 10 or 15 minutes to the nearest emergency clinic, then that's that poison working for 10 or 15 more minutes on the system, whereas you could maybe induce vomiting on the advice of your veterinarian at the scene and get that poison out of there quicker.
Right. And that's a great point. And I want to stress what you said just a second ago about calling ahead. It's so important that you call ahead before you first off, before you can render aid if possible, but definitely call ahead either en route or before you leave and say, hey, you know, this is Mr. or Mrs. Johnson. We're bringing in Max in. He was just hit by a car. And the reason that you should do that is it's not like human medicine where they have an emergency room and they're ready to go. A lot of times these guys you know, they're working on other things, and they have to be prepared for your dog or your cat or whatever's coming in. So make sure you do call ahead and have that emergency vet hospital on, you know, in your contact list on your cell phone or whatever you're using. We're talking to Jillian Meyer. She is the owner of HealthyPawsLA.com. She is the teacher of Pet First Aid and CPR. And Michelle's been quiet for the first half hour of the show. Michelle, do you have any questions for Jillian?
You know, I think that it's not necessarily questions, but these are good points to make. A lot of people will call us, and I'm sure Jillian as well, and ask her and you questions about first aid. But when it really comes down to it, Robert, you and I both know, we've had people in our class that couldn't even complete the class. They just can't deal with severe trauma and severe emergencies. I think everyone who is a pet owner or works in the pet industry should take a first aid class. I mean, more and more people are having not only dogs but cats as well as other domesticated type pets. And, you know, accidents happen, same as they do with kids. And the more people that know how to deal with those situations, the better off it is for you and your pet. But it's not for everyone. I think that we should stress that some emergencies, when your dog gets hit by a car, it's not just laying there on the ground. There's blood involved. There could be compound fractures where bones are protruding through the flesh. And there's a lot more that goes into it, and I know we're just touching on the edge of first aid, but there's some things in there that people just, they've got to be prepared for when they see something like that, so that they can go into safety mode and do what the dog or cat or any other animal, for that matter, needs them to do.
Jillian?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. You know, that's the thing, is you never know what's going to happen, and you always think it's not going to happen to you. And, you know, just like, you know, some people might say, oh, I can just, you know, I'll just get a book on it at the library. But, you know, just as reading a medical text is not going to make you a doctor, reading a book on first aid and CPR is not going to train you into doing the actual actions. And the course that I teach, we call it the Pet Saver. It's actually an 8-hour course. I teach it over here in Los Angeles. I arrange my own classes, but then I also teach for Santa Monica College and West Los Angeles Colleges as part of their continuing education programs. And I like the setup that we do there because, you know, sometimes when I teach the classes in the whole 8 hours, there's so much information, it can kind of be a little overwhelming. And I know people's brains are kind of like swimming a little bit at the end of the class. I know mine is, just from talking about it. But with the college classes that I teach, we'll teach 4 hours one Saturday and 4 hours the next Saturday. And that first 4 hours, we always get into, you know, the actions for the rescue breathing, the primary pet assessment, and the CPR. And we do it you know, no less than 15 to 20 times in that first time. We do it over and over and over just to make sure that, you know, it's instilled not only in people's memories but kind of in their muscles. You know, we want to give them muscle memory because, like I said, when that adrenaline is rushing, you know, it kind of just, the information just flies out of your brain. And it's always interesting to me when just a week later, when I have everyone come into the class, we'll do review, you know, and I'll tell everyone to get into position for CPR. And invariably, there's usually about, you know, when I teach the class, it's usually anywhere from like 10 to 15 people or so. And, you know, you get about half the class or so that typically can't remember exactly what their position, their hand positioning should be for CPR. And that's just a week later. So, you know, you're not going to learn what you think you can from the internet or, you know, from a book. You really want to get out there and practice these actions, learn from someone that's been certified in the pet first aid CPR, and learn these actions and practice it. And then, you know, go home and practice it on, there are some actions you can practice on your animal. You don't want to practice CPR on a live animal. You know, we practice in our class, we practice on stuffed dogs. So if you have a little stuffed animal, you can kind of practice that on your animal at home. But there are some different actions that you can practice on your pet, such as muzzling. And we highly recommend that pet owners practice muzzling on their animals, because then in case of an emergency, you know, if you've done it before multiple times, then the dog is thinking, oh, we've done this before, you know, this is cool, instead of, oh, what is my owner trying to do? They're trying to wrap this thing around my mouth. Should I freak out? You know, that kind of thing. So if it is something that you've practiced on your animal, then they're going to be used to it, and they're not going to, you know, take it to the next level. And then, well, go ahead. Were you going to say something?
I was just going to mention very quickly, Jillian, about dogs becoming aggressive when they're injured, and that's their reaction. You know, some dogs have that fight or flight response, and if a dog's hit by a car, they're, as Michelle said, they're just not going to lay there on the ground. If you go to touch them, they may bite. You know, they may become aggressive in other ways, and people have to understand that and be prepared for it. Even the most docile dog, you know, the dog that lays at your feet when you're watching television, they can have that type of response if they're injured. That's their instincts taking over. Do you deal with that in your class?
Oh, absolutely. That's one of our little like mantras. It's any pet that is in pain or is going to move into pain can and will bite. And, you know, people say, oh, my little Fifi wouldn't bite me. Well, that's wrong. You know, we're coded to move away from pain. So if it's going to take a bite, if they think it's going to, you know, to get away from that pain, they're going to need to bite you to move away from that, then that's what they're going to do. It's not anything that's, you know, against the owner. It's just purely reactionary and instinctual, just like you said.
Right. And another point I want to make is one of the things that we come across when we teach CPR is when we're giving, you know, the Heimlich maneuver on your dog, and we practice on stuffed animals as well as the CPR mannequin. But one of the things that we always do in our class is we always make one of our personal dogs as the quote-unquote guinea pig, where we flip them upside down, you know, and kind of hold them upside down like you're supposed to in this Heimlich maneuver. And people don't understand that they can't do that. You know, a 100-pound squirming dog is very difficult to control, unlike a stuffed animal or a mannequin that you're working on in your CPR class. Do you address that at all in your class?
Well, we definitely talk about restraining and trying to take whatever you have that's near you, you know, to do that restraining. Again, we first off and foremost, we want to restrain the animal, you know, whether it takes, and that's, again, why I have, like, blankets in my car and towels in my car, you know. Can I wrap it around the animal? Can I, you know, maybe sometimes you might have to, like, fasten them to a board. You know, we have, excuse me, I have, what do you call this? Like, I have a small dog, so she's only like 9 pounds. So, you know, in my house, I always know where everything is that I could actually use if I would have to restrain her. So if I have to use like a cutting board and I have to maybe tie her to a board, I'm going to be prepared for that. You know, with restraining your animal, it's always nice if you have an extra leash or you know, something that you can use as a quick wraparound muzzle. You can use belts. We have part of our first aid kit. We just use big, long strips of felt that I'll give out to the class attendees. And it's a big, long piece of felt that we can use as a muzzle. But I give it to people, and they can just have that right in their purse. And it's kind of funny. People think, oh, you know, this little piece of felt, my dog's, you know, going to be able to snap this kind of thing open. But people don't realize that dogs have a lot more force in closing their mouths than they do opening their mouths, just like crocodiles. And it doesn't take a whole lot to keep the mouth closed if, you know, you can wrap some kind of, you know, some twine or that kind of thing, you know, around the animal's mouth. But, yeah, definitely restraining can be very difficult. And just like you said, if it's a 120-pound dog, I just took my dog to the vet Friday. She is getting chiropractic treatment because she's starting to get a little slip disc. And she's only 9 pounds, and it was difficult to restrain her while we're doing this chiropractic treatment. She didn't like the noise. I don't know what you call this little device that they were doing down her back. It didn't hurt because they did it on me. But she didn't like this little ka-chunk noise. And they do it from her neck all the way down to her spine. And I'm telling you what, this little squirming dog, you know, it took two of us to really, you know, to restrain her and not have her, you know, move out and fall off the table. So it can be difficult. And you really, you know, if you have someone else that can help you, then that's, you know, obviously ideal, but it doesn't always happen that way.
Right. And we're talking to Jill. Go ahead, Michelle.
I just want to kind of complete the thought there. And, you know, with first aid, that's a big thing that you're discussing. The difference between a 9-pound dog that you possibly own yourself, that you're very used to, and your neighbor's 100-pound German Shepherd. You know, you're going to want to help that dog just as much as you want to help your own dog, but physically, it might be impossible. You know, so in our classes, I always tell people, because I am only 5'1", and I do have to physically restrain German Shepherds a lot of the time, and other large-sized dogs, because we typically deal with more working breeds. And when we have our smaller women come in, and even our smaller frame men, they cannot physically restrained my poor German Shepherd, who's been doing this his whole life, who is like, oh my God, again, I'm going to have to be restrained. And he lays there and he takes it and he makes it easy on them, but they cannot physically do it. When we have our 13-year-old daughter come in and do this to her own dog, who he happens to be hers, and she's able to do it, he is assisting her in doing this because they practice. So I just want to make it clear to everyone the importance of practicing these maneuvers with your dog, a fireman's carry, the muzzling you mentioned, you know, laying them down on one side or the other and flipping them over by grabbing all four paws and rolling them on their back onto a board and things like that. If you don't expose them to those types of things from puppyhood, the likelihood of them being easy on you to restrain so that you can help them is not likely at all.
I agree with that. Jillian, do you want to make a point with that?
No, I think that's a great point. You know, just like you guys are saying, it's all about, it's part of the training, you know. And that's what we try to make in our class, you know. It's all about the training that you do from when they're puppies and continue it into adulthood so that they're used to these different maneuvers. I totally agree.
So we're talking to Jillian Meyer. She is the owner of HealthyPetsLA.com, and she teaches first aid and Healthy Paws. I'm sorry, HealthyPawsLA.com. She teaches first aid and CPR to all the dog owners in one of the largest cities in America. Jillian, we have about 10 minutes left, and what I'd like to do, since I want to focus a little bit on summer dangers, that was what we were going to talk about today, but interesting topics, of course, that we mentioned about first aid. Let's talk about what I want to do, it kind of in a shotgun form, is let's talk about 5 or 6 different things that you come across during the summer. I know you mentioned fireworks, and just give us one tip or two on each one, whether it be, you know, drinking antifreeze, this is what you're supposed to do. You know, just one or two tips and just kind of shoot them off very quickly so our owners, pet owners and listeners can know what to expect. I know we're not going to educate everybody, but just give a couple of tips. So let's do that if we could.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about some heat injuries, you know, just to bring back into people's awareness. The inside of a car gets very hot very quickly, so if it is a hot day, it doesn't even matter if you're going to roll the windows down, it doesn't matter if you're going to sit in the shade, it's still going to get hot in that car. So, you know, you want to really think about just leaving the animal at home where they're going to be a little bit more better off. And if you do leave them at home, make sure that they have adequate water, especially if they're outside. You know, they could quickly go into heat stroke. So we want to make sure that we have adequate water for them. You want to make sure that if you take your animal hiking during the summertime, hiking or running on the beach, you know, watch out for overexertion. We have a lot of breeds that are a little bit more susceptible to heat stroke, such as what we call our brachycephaliac dogs, our dogs with the shorter noses, such as your American Bulldog or your Pekingese or your Pugs. You know, they're more susceptible to heat stroke because they just don't have enough. They can't get enough oxygen through their chassis, and you want to. If you have one of those types of breeds, you want to be a little bit more careful. They actually have coats, little like water-filled coats that you can put on for your dog. They have little water-filled mats that you can get for your animal if you know they're more susceptible to heat stroke. You definitely. I heard about a local pet sitter who got into a little bit of trouble. She was up in the valley, which can get quite hot in the summertime, up to like 110, 115, and she forgot to turn on the air conditioner for her client's pugs. And when she came back, they were pretty much near death. They didn't die, thank goodness, but you know, they definitely warranted a trip to the emergency vet. If you're taking your pet out, your dog out boating, you know, a lot of people go out to the lakes and that kind of thing. You want to make sure that not only you have your life jacket, but your pet has a life jacket on. And, you know, we always think that our dog's going to be, they're such great swimmers. They can all pretty much swim, but a lot of them, you know, aren't as, not a lot of them, but some of them aren't as good as others. And if you're way out there, they're still going to get overexerted and have a possibility of drowning if something happens with the boat. As far as our poisoning, you know, in the summertime we're using a lot more snail bait. We get a lot more lawn care with our insecticides. We had a woman who actually, her dog was having seizures, and she couldn't figure out what was going on. She took our class. And one of the things we recommend people do in our class is to keep a pet health diary. Anything that happens with them, write it down, and then that will help you when you go into the vet. If some kind of chronic condition is happening with them, it will help the vet diagnose that condition. But with this particular woman, she would mark down in her little BlackBerry when her dog would have a seizure, and she noticed that the dog was having a seizure a couple days after the lawn care guy came, the pest control guy. And what was going on is, you know, he's spraying around the house, and the dog was going and licking the side of the house, that insecticide off the side of the house, and a couple days later he would have a seizure. So by keeping that pet health diary, it enabled her to figure that out. You have a lot of right now this is flea and tick season, so you know we do have those topical flea and tick preventatives, and you just want to make sure that you don't overuse them. You know, I had in my last class one of my attendees, her dog had a reaction. She put she took it to the vet, and they put on this topical flea preventative, and it was about a half an hour later that dog started like shaking. It was attacking her neurological system, and it was shaking. It was kind of started convulsing a little bit, and she called up the vet, and they actually had her like use some Dawn dishwashing liquid to wash it off, and you know it turned out okay. But you know, she was able, because she had taken the class, she was monitoring the dog a little bit more than what she normally would have. Citronella candles, those can be dangers. If people have pools, you know, you want to stay away. You want to make sure that you have your pool chemicals, you know, stored away safely, because animals, your dogs can get chemical burns. If you live in a place that has, you know, if it's a second story, or if it's it has a balcony, that kind of thing, you want to make sure that your animals, you monitor your animals, because they can fall off the balcony. I actually had a friend who's, this is her cat, last week, she's on the third floor, and her cat fell out of the window. The screen wasn't attached correctly, and it fell out of the window, and it's going to be okay, thank goodness. But you know, you think that a cat can fall pretty far and land on its legs fine, but they still get jarred, they still you know, fall on their backs, that kind of thing. Gosh,
that's plenty. I think that will help out a lot. Jillian, I appreciate this so much. We want to make sure that we can send some questions your way if we do get them. You are on Facebook and Twitter. Just search Healthy Paws LA in the search bar, and I'm sure you will pop up, as well as she is on LinkedIn. That's how we made the connection, was on the LinkedIn site. So, you know, I appreciate it very much. So, Jillian, I think the most important aspect of this whole thing is to be prepared. Kind of that Boy Scout, Girl Scout motto that we learned as little kids, always be prepared, and that will help out so much. Be prepared and practice. Michelle, do you have a final question for Jillian, or are you okay?
I am just fine. I appreciate and applaud people like Jillian who are out there doing pet education for pet safety and making people aware.
Great. Jillian, what would you like to say to close?
Well, I just want to really encourage anyone to take a pet first aid class and research it in your area. If you go to www.pettech, that's PETTECH.net, you can find a pet tech certified instructor in your area if you're not in the Los Angeles area. So, you know, really seek it out. Take the time. The classes are fun. You learn a lot.
There you go. Jillian Myers, HealthyPawsLA.com. Jillian, let's stay in touch, and if we have something else that needs to be addressed in terms of first aid and CPR, we'll make sure we have you back on, okay?
That sounds great. Thanks, Robert. Thanks, Michelle. You guys have a great Sunday.
You too. So on behalf of Jillian Myers and Michelle, this is Robert Forto for DogWorks Radio. We will see you guys here same time next week. DogWorksRadio.com is the site. You can follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. Just search DogWorks Radio in the search bar. So until then, never forget your dreams. We'll see you next time. Goodbye.